Good afternoon, and welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. It is Sunday, July 12th, 2026, all day today. At least that's the rumor. Although Florida's getting rid of daylight savings time, so they might get either more day or less day. I'm not sure how that works. I think everyone dreams of getting rid of daylight savings time, actually.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Wouldn't it? It'd be so much fun. You could stop messing with your clocks. You could put them way up high and have tricky clocks and never have to touch them again. Not have to get the directions out for your watch, all that stuff.
So the news just said oil demand has gone down.
I know.
Won't say the word. What's up with that?
Yeah.
Well, is that a million barrels a day worldwide, or is that like in one particular? Because a million barrels worldwide is a drop in the bucket.
Yeah, right?
If you're looking at the world market.
Guys, this is like, what a rookie mistake. Okay, what a rookie mistake. That is just like, I howled with laughter when I heard that. Was, oh my God. They are equating out of stock with a reduction in demand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what? If I don't have any beef on the shelf, all of a sudden I have a reduced amount of demand on beef.
Yeah.
Because I don't have any. Okay?
Right.
Tell me that you don't know jack about supply chain without telling me you don't know jack about supply chain. That was a ridiculous statement for them to make.
I like it. See, that's how we find out what people really think. You put something kind of just stupid and offensive on the news, and then, what did you think about that?
Oh, so, we're going to be okay now.
So for the people who are listening to this on the ARC, okay,
the problem is solved.
Yep, we're saved. Actually, we're saved. It's this show. We're going to change topics now. We're going to talk about CJ's dog for the rest of the hour because. Our fuel problems are over. So CJ, for the people who would listen to this on the archive, who are a lot of people, and they're like, what are they talking about? Because the news won't be on the archive. Explain what they said and why it's stupid, if you wouldn't mind.
Okay, so during a period of time where there's been an immense reduction in the amount of oil and fuel supply, they're saying that there is a reduction in the demand, in other words, the need.
Yeah.
And that was the actual news. Someone made that a news story in a 5-minute news break, and that was newsy enough to qualify. Like, so they're telling everyone
that
that's a national news feed. It wasn't anything to do with the station, just to clear that up. But
here's why I firmly believe that supply chain should be taught at the high school level, because it teaches you a certain kind of reasoning that appears to be absent. It really is how systems work. Supply chain is the science of systems. If you learn it, you're going to learn how to run any system better. It's really a fundamental skill. And it keeps newscasters from making silly statements like, hey, you know, there seems to be a reduction in global petroleum demand at a time when there's a reduction in global petroleum supply.
Yeah.
And they're not equating one with the other.
Go ahead.
If I didn't have any Post-its, then I wouldn't sell any Post-its.
Right.
Right.
So when a tanker comes in full of gasoline, which I guess most of our gas now is going to be coming in on tankers, how much gasoline does a tanker hold?
A lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Bill.
Can I give you a figure that I do have off the top of my head? It will take, you know, of course, we're gonna have a lot more large tanker trucks hauling out of the port, hauling fuel out of the port now.
Oh, sure.
Statewide, if that happens, 365 days of the year, we'll put another 1,200 tanker trucks on the road daily.
Daily.
Yeah, so that's the figure in tanker truck.
What could go wrong?
Well, it doesn't exist.
Yeah, right?
You have shortages in equipment, you have shortages in drivers, and there are multiple points across our fire-prone state where we do not allow tanker trucks to go through, and one of them is the Talbot Tunnel. I don't think it's been mapped.
Oh?
Oh, yeah, that's because they had that wreck on the tunnel.
Yeah, I remember in the 80s? I was still, I grew up in Contra Costa County, and I was still back home when that happened.
Filled that tunnel full of
fire. Everybody in the tunnel.
Yeah. But that's,
so what are we going to do with major choke points like that?
Well, but I'm just curious. When a tanker pulls into the port and unloads a whole boatload of gasoline, they got to have storage for that. And then there's one right behind it. And so that fuel can't sit at the port very long. I mean, because there's others coming in that have to unload. So there has to be this constant supply of either pipelines or trucks to get that fuel out of the port so the next load can come in. And a load of gasoline out of a tanker, I'm sure statewide probably isn't a day's supply, is it?
Oh, no.
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 Yeah, one day.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, no, it's definitely not. You know, one of the things that, Mike, we discovered this when we were running through the numbers, to know that you really are analyzing the data correctly in for supply chain situations, you have to run through multiple data comparisons of both what you think demand is and what you think supply is. And Mike and Skip York have both been super helpful in giving me data about what the estimated production amounts were. And then I got some information on sales data for gas, diesel, and jet fuel. And when I put that up against production, the first question that I asked is, hey, why is Valero making 350% more jet fuel than we use in the States? Well, we dug into that, and then we found out that a significant portion of fuel sales had been left off of the initial analysis of sales because they only looked at what had been taxed.
Yeah,
so
sales
to aviation and military. Yeah, so it left off 3.8 billion gallons of jet fuel sales. And when I'm looking at numbers like that, 3.8 billion gallons, I'm not sure how many tankers that is, but I'm not sure if the people who were gauging the different logistical capacity constraints, were they working off the taxable figure or the non-taxable figure, because there's a hell of a big difference between the two.
The difference in the tanker sizes, you know, crude oil tankers, obviously much bigger. Gasoline tankers, if I remember right, it's like 250, maybe 300,000 barrels. So you're somewhere around 10 million gallons a day. Gasoline takes like a day and a half to offload the tanker, get it into the system, transport it in a few days, a week, and the state uses somewhere around 38 million gallons a day still. You know, studies were done on that versus the EV adoption rates.
And that's gasoline,
much slower. Yeah, just gasoline. And then you got to remember, they got to get the jet fuel in. They got to get the diesel in.
Right.
So, you know, you got all three of those fuels being shipped and going into the same docks, the same ports. They all have to take turns. Yeah, that's a lot of time. It's very time consuming.
Do they have that kind of storage at the ports, though, or is it going into a pipeline?
They don't have that kind of storage at the ports.
No.
Okay.
It's a constraint. Yeah.
That's the problem.
So that's a choke point right there.
Yeah. That dog don't hunt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're not going to be able to pull this much fuel through the ports. And the thing is that we're not getting as much right now as we will a year from now because of different kind of constraints and because there's fuel in the downstream part of the supply chain. So the ports aren't seeing the full impact of how much is going to come through yet.
Mm-hmm.
God.
Now, does this gas, does this come into the same ports that, say, freight comes into? Like the big container ships? Is this all coming into the same port?
It definitely comes through the major ports, L.A., Long Beach, Oakland, but it also comes through Stockton, and then, Mike, please go ahead, and I think you know more about the marine.
They are adopting
the refinery adjacent.
Some of the refineries are taking, they converted Valero to basically a port terminal, so they are offloading some there. And then, you know, like CJ's saying, up to Stockton, Oakland, Long Beach, and L.A., along with San Francisco, too. They offload directly there into the airport. You look at that marinetraffic.com, I've seen quite a few times even right now where you'll see tankers, they call them oil chemical tankers, oil product tankers, they're sitting there anchored off in San Pablo Bay, just waiting to offload. Last time I drove there, you could see them on the Bay Bridge. You see them all parked out there, just waiting for their turn to offload. So that's another, CJ saying, it's a big supply chain bottleneck.
Yeah.
To get all that fuel to go, you know, for instance, Valero, 92% or so of its fuel went by pipeline. All the fuel they made, it went by pipeline. They trucked out maybe 7 or 8% of it. So, you know, that access is critical, and that's a big part of the problem that you're having. And the ports, it goes back to California as an energy island. It was never designed to bring in fuel. It was designed to bring crude oil into their piers, unload that crude at a very fast, they could pump that crude real fast, produce the products at the refinery, and then use the already, all the infrastructure that has already been put in place to, test the fuel, ship the fuel, get it out of there, ship it to Concord, ship it to Brisbane up north, and then they distribute it to Kinder Morgan in Brisbane. They distribute it to the end users. So that's where the big problem is. And the ports, they're not designed for it. They never were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I look at that. That sounds to me like the major bottleneck is going to be the ports, because you're not going to be able to bring in and offload it fast enough to supply the demand. I mean,
no, you can't.
It's impossible.
That's the problem. That's the big problem. But like CJ's saying, how many trucks? You know, those trucks don't exist. The infrastructure to offload the fuel into those trucks doesn't exist. It's not even close. It's not even on the same planet.
Yeah.
Because they just were not designed for it. They were designed for cargo.
Right. Now, when those ships come in, they don't, like, pull up to the dock. They unload out to a pipe out in the bay, don't they, or do they?
I'm sorry, CJ, go ahead.
No, you were saying the same thing. They go up to the berth. In most cases, they go adjacent to the dock.
Hmm. Okay.
I think they're thinking maybe. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I think some oil offloading is done. Maybe off the berth, but 90%+ of it they pull right up, and they have loading and offloading arms, and they hook up, and that's the way they do it. So
yeah.
Once the ship's there, it's there, and it doesn't. It's not like 10 minutes later, it's empty and unhooked and gone. It's you're looking at a day and a half, 2 days of getting it in there, and getting it secured, offloading it, and going from there. So
and the other part of this that we're, I mean, that's assumed in this discussion is that this isn't like 2020 and 2021 where we basically blew up our own world and then finally figured out, okay, everybody's not going to die. I guess we can, restart the engines and go back to normal. This runs the risk of being a permanent catastrophic failure if it's not addressed. This isn't a temporary bump in the road. We're just going to make some adjustments. Like, we're blowing up our own system.
But also with the pandemic, you know, we didn't, there's a lot that we didn't know. People wanted to be safe. And the world was in that together. Right? And I think that the last thing, the world being in this together, that's what we have different here. You know, this is a situation, certainly when it comes to the fuel end of it.
Oh, yeah.
This is the creation of California's government. We did this to ourselves. You know, if there were issues about emissions from the refineries, there are better ways to address those rather than tapping into that. You know, couldn't we just really address the emission problems? There are some very advanced filters, catalytic converters. There are even carbon capture systems where we can take that CO2 and make it into something to make money out of. You know, we could work on the real business problem that is causing higher emissions.
Yeah, but you're forgetting that it makes a lot more sense to ship it across the ocean and create I don't know how much more CO2 than we were ever producing at a refinery. So
well, a lot of other toxic emissions besides CO2.
Yeah, let's do that.
That black smoke is unburned hydrocarbon. It's not that's not CO2. So you get a lot of that, and then you got one thing that's real hard for us to measure is the refineries in the other countries. And I haven't went and measured any of them in India or South Korea, but those refineries would be gross polluters in California.
Of course.
Oh, yeah.
They would fall under California gross polluting category, not just polluting more, gross polluters.
Mm-hmm. How is this going to affect the availability of fuel to the rest of the country? I mean, I don't think they're going to be too wild about experiencing shortages because California isn't getting enough fuel, so we're going to give them ours.
Yeah, but the other part of it is they're going to get to pay for it. That's the truly egregious part is we're going to force the federal taxpayer. You know, when we start talking about the Army Corps of Engineers, we start talking about all these things where we're going to have to roll in all these federal systems. Federal taxpayers pay for that. So everyone throughout the entire country is going to be on the hook to pay for this.
For our bed management.
How terrible.
Yes, and it's like the logistics, you know, that CJ's so knowledgeable in, you know. You're pulling all this fuel from the defensive districts, fuel storage, the PAD districts, 3-in-1, which are not ours. They're from around the country, and we're pulling a lot of fuel from both of those. And when they start to run low, then they'll have no choice but to cut back the fuel to us. And at the same time, you know, cut back our shipments, so we're already short. And then you'll be in a situation where they're starting to run a little short on their end. Their refineries are at 98%. They have to cut some of those back and go into turnaround. They can't keep running like that. So, yeah, it's just it's the contagion effect all the way rolls through the country, mm-hmm. through the operation of their equipment and through the supply chain. It's all tied together.
It is all tied together. And, you know, we've thrown around a bunch of numbers here, and that is all posted on the page for today. And I also posted, since we have the gas crisis tab on the site and the gascrisis.org, the kind of direct link to go to that, I put another drop down and called it supply chain. So I added CJ's information, and I added the paper that she sent us that has all this great stuff. I'm sitting here looking at it, and the terrific graphic that I sketched for you earlier when we got tangled in wine and wearing other people's clothes and stuff in the first hour. If you missed that, you can go back and listen to that again.
The show is going off the rails.
Oh, you should have heard us the couple of weeks ago when we were actually off the air, but they weren't sure we were off the air, so Alex
That was a great show.
Alex told us to talk about nothing, so it turned out we actually talked about nothing for 90 minutes, and we talked to no one about nothing, which really was a new low after...
It's a great show nobody will ever hear.
Almost 16 years of...
I regret that I can't...
We actually said things that were super inappropriate, thinking if someone's hearing this, they'll call. Certainly they'll call. Oh, my God. Well,
I have... That's fun.
Yeah, it was super fun. I told some inappropriate jokes I learned at the emergency room. So anyway, that paper is there. Back to serious business. The paper is there at gascrisis.org. But you can find all the stuff for today's show at wethepeopleradio.us.
Weeping on his knees, he offered up his wedding ring for a sup of diesel, please. But the nozzle is a highwayman, a robber in a mask, and the taxman's got his greedy straw into every single flask. Oh, it's an arm and a leg just to keep the tank fed, so I'm tipping a keg of the Guinness instead. Tell the lads in the desert and take their golden barrels and to shove them in the pump. I'm done with the petrol, I'm done with the gas. They can take their high prices and kiss me rosy ass. I'm filling the tank with the cream of the stout, and I'm running on Guinness till the barrels run out.
Yep. Because my people don't do wine. We do have an alternate beverage. It was really hard to kind of cut that song. I had to have some like little burps in the middle to fix the words. Unfortunate. So, CJ, I was like kind of... I was cutting to the chase here. About time. Here we go. I was looking... All right, I'm looking at immediate opportunity reopen Valero Benicia. So, 2.12 billion gallons of annual fuel production, more than 55% of the refinery capacity lost, 5.8 million gallons every day. I mean, so if they go put that all back, what is the... We've already kind of said we don't know how long it'll take and all the problems that might go with that. But let's say everybody put their shoulder to the wheel, really paid attention. We didn't let California be in charge of any of it. And we found some actual people who know science and production. How quickly does this turn the corner to either of you? You both have different perspective on it from the supply side and from the actual fuel side. What do you think?
Well, Mike, if you had all the resources that you needed to reopen Valero, how long would it take? Assuming you had all the resources you needed, how long would that take?
A lot of unknowns. Minimum 8 months.
Sure.
Yeah, I was going to say, okay, pretend all the people who were gone. I mean, this is obviously imaginary land, right? So, you know, bring back all qualified people. You don't have any problems with that. You don't have any problems with anything. To just turn it back on, get things back in the system. Like, it's a long time.
You have to get back. Go ahead, CJ.
No, you.
The one thing I wanted to ask is, in some cases when you restart an operation, it goes from a trickle to a flow. So when you talk about 8 months, Mike, is that at before the eight months to a 12-month mark, does the trickle restart, or is that to restart it even at the smallest level?
No, to restart it at a small level and get it up, there's a lot of things you got to bring back, things that are normally there for a restart after a turnaround that are gone. Inventories are gone, intermediates, tank levels, oils, chemicals, MEA, acids, all that stuff's all gone. Catalyst, fluid coke, that's all gone. And you'd have to bring, it's impossible to bring the people back. You'll basically have to go into a mode similar to where they were in 1968, 1969 when they were building the plant and they hired classes. Mm-hmm. They hired, I forget how many classes, of 25, they called them technicians. It was quite a few, 35 times, at least eight, maybe nine classes, and you have to train them. So what you have to get back is a few people that know the units on the B complex and a few people that know the units on the A complex that can teach new people Like you said, you can get someone that's motivated from high school. They can learn and be a good, be a very good operator. You have to go into that mode where you're starting from scratch. It's just like you just built the refinery back in 1968, 69. So you got to get to that. That's the quickest, and it's not going to be fast, but that would be the quickest way to get people up to speed. The difficulty is going to be the control room because it is the most complex control room in the state. None are like it. Every unit on another refinery, every unit has its own control room and its own operators. At Valero, there's a B complex and an A complex, and on the A complex, where it was like me or Charles or me and Dave or whoever were running that A complex, you would normally have like eight, there's six other control room control boards there. Well, in this case, it's just one, and you're running all those units that tie together. That's what makes Valero even more challenging, is I call it unique complexity. It was a pioneer design refinery when it was built. I don't know, there was no refinery like it in the world that was built like it was built. And there were a few that have been built like that since, but they're still few and far between, and definitely nothing in California. So that would be the thing. You'd have to get all those, any inspections, any type of problems it has, they got to be fixed. And then you got to get the people trained. You got to get people trained up, and hopefully you get enough people that can. I think, you know, I had a few of my friends said they'll come back. They're not control room, but they could definitely teach classes, like on the CAT unit, the Coker, the crew unit. They could definitely teach classes on them, especially because the equipment, everything's still there, just not running. But that's where you would, that's where your great bottleneck would be. You can get the materials back. That's where a lot of the cost of the money comes from. You can get the materials back. You can repair things that need to be repaired, but you got to get the people trained up. So that'll be the biggest bottleneck. And that's why I say probably closer to a year. They should never have let it went down. That was a big mistake.
Well, see, that's the, so let's shift back over to the wider supply chain discussion. So as you're looking at this mess in a broad scope, CJ, if they keep going where they're going, what do you see as kind of the phase out? What do we get rid of that we can't run? I mean, is that what happens when you run out of fuel? Do you just shut your industries down?
Well, you got to keep your ports going. You got to keep your mill like
yeah. If you don't have any marine diesel, like how are you bringing
you
in fuel?
You got to try to keep your airports going as best you can. Of course, the military takes priority, and then you got to have the ports running. Then, what do you think, CJ?
Well, and then you have to have your emergency services have to be fueled.
Yes,
I've reached out to California Highway Patrol, Cal Fire, all that, to try and make sure that they knew how the magnitude of the situation.
Do you get the impression that they know this?
No, 100% they don't. I'm sure that they don't. That our elected officials, our agencies, including the California Energy Commission, nobody's working off the right data. Nobody is looking at the right. One of the fundamentals of supply chain is the interconnectivity of all things. And these agencies are only looking to the end of their purview. And that's just not how it works. If you only look to the end of your purview, that means that you've dropped something off a ledge. And that's not a luxury that any supply chain professional has. So what happens, Aaron, my friend, the cost of fuel goes up to the point where your ordinary family is really having trouble making the trip to work. I fear that we're in for a major economic recession driven by the fuel shortage. We must remember that everything at some point got there on a truck,
mm-hmm.
right? And the fuel is one of those things that raises the cost of everything.
Yep.
It raises the land, the cost of goods. So we're going to have not only fuel go up, and that impacts families everywhere, but your food and every last little thing is going to go up in price. And when that happens, then purchasing starts the consumer purchasing starts to slow, and then we have excess inventories at manufacturers, and we have the foundation for a recession. And this is something that will head us towards a recession if we do not get our house in order. And California is just too big of a beast. We'll bring other people down with us.
That's what I was just going to ask. Is this an encapsulated crisis, or is this a contagion?
No. Yeah, because it all interconnects. You know, you don't have something happen in the supply chain anywhere without it impacting the rest of the supply chain somewhere. One of our good examples is a few years ago, there was a volcano eruption in Iceland that shut down the global air freight system, right? And so you have global air freight impacted in LAX that didn't even go near Iceland.
Yeah.
So it's all, that also gives us a nice holistic message of, look, we're all in this together.
Yeah.
Everybody, every last little one of us, we cannot leave anybody behind. The whole world has to win for the world to win the most, right? It's going to keep impacting working families, industry, government services. I'm real concerned about things like wildfire response. That's coming.
Yeah,
if we don't fix it.
Yeah, because I mean, up where we are, we have had some really significant fires. We've had some here recently. We hear the bombers flying over the house, back and forth, mm-hmm. fueling up. To if you don't have all that,
Have bombers,
right?
Yeah, so how much of the port traffic is being, displaced or slowed down or whatever by having all of these fueling ships coming in?
I don't know the exact numbers myself, but I would say the CJ's shortage down there at that Shell station is a symptom of that.
Yeah,
I think that the ship, I don't think that the tanker vessels, because they go into a different terminal than the container vessels.
Okay. Right?
So I think that the vessels will come through, the vessels will come through without slowing container traffic. However, you have a whole heck of a lot more trucks going in
with
fuel.
Yeah.
So it will impact the last mile delivery of those containers, and may slow being able to get containers out of the port.
Well, and anybody who spends much time on the road knows that it's always so much more exciting if we have a lot more trucks.
Yeah.
Right, and trucks that are essentially traveling firebombs.
Yeah, right.
Won't that be fun?
Yeah.
What could go wrong?
right. How could that be a problem? Huh. Back to the I'll put you in a trunk and help people look for you. Yeah, wow. Which I did post on our gas crisis page because it just called out to me today.
Right.
Oh, my gosh. Well, we have to take a really quick break, but on that unpleasant note, I found finally the correct information for the plumber. So for those of you that are still going, what plumber? The guy from the beginning of the show, you got to go back, listen to the first hour. So if you're having a plumbing issue and you live in the Reading area, it's hotwaterplumbinghero.com. His name is Robert, and people named Robert are very helpful. Robert does our archives for the show here, too. Thanks, Robert. You can find them at 888-482-4287, but just go to hotwaterplumbinghero.com. All the info's there. Hook them out and fix all your stuff, and won't overcharge you. Yay. Doesn't even make a mess. Doesn't wear his shoes in your house or anything, and he's fun. And I learned a lot. I got to watch. It's kind of fun.
You can do it next time.
Yeah. Well, I did it before.
I'm excited.
One of the few times I've ever hired a plumber. Usually it's me swearing under the sink, but it was Robert. Be right back. You can find us at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
Who is it?
so much space. And when you're out there, without care, yeah, I was out of.
There you go, CJ. You can put that on your website, see, and that can be your disclaimer. That way, if you say anything crazy, you can just say, I know too much. And there's a whole song. And there's a whole song about it. So bottom line is, that song means that that's why we're all crazy. Because the more we learn about this, the more crazy you feel.
It's a little scary when you start diving into it.
I mean, what the heck? And then, of course, people are just like, well, it hasn't happened, so I guess it's not going to happen.
Well, the thing is, too, they don't... Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, honey. I'm sorry.
No, you finish.
No, you.
You finish. We do this.
Oh, they don't see. They get false reporting all the time. When the prices started going up in January, when Valero pulled the plug, the news kept saying they were going down in April. Remember, we had talked before. Prices were up to 80-90 cents a gallon in Redding and Chico when Valero shut down before the war even started. That was all the logistics. That was the ports. That was the inability to offload the fuel to get the fuel here. And these prices go through the roof. People constantly ignore that we're $2 to $2.50 a gallon more than the rest of the country. They're constantly ignoring the fact that the rest of the country isn't even beginning to talk about shortages. They're not even talking about shortages of fuel anywhere except in our state. Our state is the problem.
Right. And then the whole Iran thing, let's weave that in. CJ, where does that fit in the scope of all things here? For the people who think that this is all caused by that,
if this is one of those situations where, like, I've been an independent voter for 40 years, so I'm voting independent before it was cool. This is one of those situations where the two major parties look, they each have a piece of this. Okay, folks, we cannot say, this is all the Dems, this is all the Republicans. Everybody owns a spot, okay? Everybody owns a piece. The upstream part of this, the war interrupts what we make gas out of in a tremendous amount. And it's going to, we're going to have, you know, we already have fertilizer shortages. It's going to impact food. So this means that for the first time in history, since we've been using petroleum, there is a gap in that supply that has never existed before. There are empty spots in that supply, and you hear people talk about where tanks and pipelines and things have gotten below a level where they become, they can't function. You know, they need to run all the time, and they stop, and it's Mike, you can probably speak to this the best. It kind of gets the material that's left there gets loose in it. And now, even if you reintroduce the crude oil or the fuel to that pipeline, you would have trouble moving it through. So we literally have a major, major disruption at every phase of the supply chain for fuel and all things made from petroleum, including slurry oil, asphalt, anything that's a petroleum product. You know, this petroleum products go into any kind of adhesive, most beauty products. They're more far-reaching than people realize. If we looked around the rooms that we're in right now, you probably couldn't find a single thing that doesn't contain a petroleum product or was made with the aid of a petroleum product. So it's really very far-reaching. The reason that the war is the reason that I am pressing federal California elected to extract California oil. Now, that sweet crude can't be used everywhere, but it does introduce new supply into the supply
chain. Yeah, it'll offset.
Didn't exist before. Yeah, it'll offset, right, Mike? Yeah.
It'll offset the 60% that we're importing. Our biggest vulnerability came from the the Gulf, the Asian countries losing their crude oil supply, and then us, we lost 30% of it. We're pretty much the only state in the country that's importing crude oil from the Middle East.
And this is all being done. I mean, let's not lose sight of why we have blown up our own world, and that's all because we want more environmental happiness. We think we're making the air cleaner. We've put all these things in place to make all these improvements, and it's having the exact opposite effect in putting everything that we care about, including our safety, security, and food production, at risk.
One of the things that we need all politicians to understand is if your solution causes job loss, you have developed the wrong solution. You probably have misidentified the root cause of the problem. Nerd out here for a second. The problem-solving methodology used in supply chain and just backing up a little bit, the definition of supply chain is every step in the process of getting a product or a service to the customer. So that includes logistics operations. Essentially, the supply chain runs the economy. We're the operators of the economy, right? I'm sorry, I put on my teacher hat and I totally lost.
No, it's okay. I mean, because point A, we talk about getting things from point A to point B. Well, you can't do that. Mm-hmm. The supply chain is the route between point A and point B.
Right. It's gonna include all of that. Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you.
Stalling for time.
I owe you big for that one.
Mm-hmm.
The problem solving methodology used in supply chain and operations is called Six Sigma. And it's also used in like quality control. And that teaches you how to get to the root cause of a problem. And what we find when we do solve the root cause of a problem is that you have this delightful chain reaction of solving a whole bunch more problems that you really didn't expect to solve. My There's Cash in That Trash program did that. We solved the root cause. We got a whole bunch of other benefits that come along. Similarly, if you identify a symptom of a problem as the root cause and you try and solve that symptom as if it was the root cause, you will cause a chain reaction of harm. And that is what I see our government do again and again and again, solving the wrong problem.
Yeah. Well,
yeah, exactly.
We talk about this a lot. People who, still have that logic module engaged. You know, if you're not factoring in the economic impact of what you're doing before you do it, you have no business making decisions. Like, you should not be in the decision making seat.
You have
exactly.
to protect family prosperity. And if you cannot protect family prosperity and children through protecting the environment, it means that you don't have the skill set to do that, because those are not separate things. We can protect prosperity and the environment at the same time. We do not have to sacrifice one for the other. The government, I constantly see this in California with the expansion of the bioenergy systems. They put emission standards on these systems that add like $1.5 million to a project, and they neglect to include how many emissions we are eliminating by processing the waste where it is created. So I'm trying to save the woodworking sector in California. California is the largest manufacturing state in the nation. We are still one of the leaders in woodworking, furniture manufacturing, all of those things. And at the same time, California is throwing away over 40 million tons of waste a year. the solution for that, including the wood that contains some glue, little plastic, all the rest of that, is to convert it into electricity at the site that is created. And these systems that do that are very clean air, very enclosed. They're terrific. And even just that one mid-sized manufacturer, when that system goes into place, it takes 800 truck trips off the road a year. We don't get credit for taking those truck trips off the road a year.
Right.
No fairsies. Right?
Yeah.
You want to drive investment that lowers emissions, and every time we take something that is rotting, like organic waste, out of the environment, we remove methane. Right? This process removes methane and it sequesters carbon. And it is just, it's just a devil to get past the, there's really unreasonable air quality standards. It cannot cost another $1.5 million to do in California than it does in Oregon. Oregonians care about their environment. So we do need, you know, we need people to really, the phrases that are coming to mind are, you know, let's go behind this shed. We need to have a conversation.
Actually, I just sent you both.
You, me, and a 2x4.
I just sent you both, like, you know, a couple of our memes here that would sum up our thing. And remember Inigo Montoya from The Princess Bride?
Yeah,
remember him? There's this terrific meme of him, and it says, "Let me explain. No, there is too much to sum up." I'm like, like that.
Oh my god!
That was I saw it right when you were saying that. I'm like, oh, I think this might be It, because it's true.
If
you have to explain this to them, you know, you can explain it, but you can't understand it for them. I don't know how, and people keep, you know, they're not electing each other. They're,
you know what,
people are
like
sending them to this, you know, to the legislature.
Yeah, but what are they, that's a whole, you know, the whole different problem. For me, as an individual who's looked at running for office, it just takes too much money. It's the money that is the barrier there. Mm-hmm. And the,
kind
know,
of. I mean,
that
I guess if the districts weren't so, well, like, look at what they did up here. Our district now, our congressional district, is 700 miles end-to-end. So it goes from Sausalito up to Alturas in the far northeast corner of the state. So, yeah, that's going to take a bunch of money because there's no way you can hit all those media markets. There's no way you can travel all those miles. There's no way you can get information out to a swath of land that big. I mean, it's just not so possible. Just, you know, nobody has that kind of time. You can't meet that many people. You're not going to live that long, especially in 2026 when seems like it's taking one person after the next. But you have people that are really wholly unqualified for the position, but oh, he or she's a nice guy, yes, so we keep electing them. And I'm like, bad choice.
Or they're, you know, yeah, they're well connected, they've got money in their pocket, you know, whatever it is. But you know what, the other thing, Aaron, is that there's absolutely all heck of a lot of behind the scenes power. I have had tremendous influence just sitting on committees. I hear you on the elected, but we can definitely do more. Those elected officials, whether they like it or not, they still are just our supplier of services and infrastructure.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the things that citizens need to realize is that when they tell us all we have is our vote, that's baloney.
No.
We have a lot more power.
There are a lot of other things we can do. We now have 25 seconds left, so I guess unfortunately we have to bid you the unceremonious goodbye. But we need to do this again soon, and still goof off anyway because we really enjoyed it.
Happy to come.
Thanks so much.
Thank you for
coming on.
CJ Nord, Mike Ariza, you guys have a lovely Sunday.
Thanks again, Aaron.
Bill and Aaron signing off.
Thank you.
The commercial-free archive is available at wethepeopleradio.us.
You know there ain't no rest for the wicked. Money don't grow on trees. We got bills to pay, we got mouths to feed. There ain't nothing in this world for free. I know we can't slow down, we can't hold back. Though you know we wish we could. I know there ain't no rest for the wicked until we close our eyes for good.